Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Texas lost a towering figure in legal and civil rights history this week when retired U.S. District Judge Barefoot Sanders died at his Dallas home. KERA's Sam Baker tells his story.
For all he accomplished, he often had to answer the same question. Was Barefoot his real name?
That's my grandmother's maiden name. It's an Anglo-Saxon name. When I was in grade school, I was very embarrassed by it. But I decided finally to just go with the flow. I mean, people were going to use it whether they liked it or not. And so I turned it to my advantage.
Harold Barefoot Sanders' interest in a legal career came early. But his father, who was an attorney, wasn't keen on the idea.
He did not encourage me to practice law. He was not displeased when I became that, but mm-hmm. he used to tell me, this is a hard way to make a living, and you might want to look at something else. That was about as close as it got.
Until it was offered to you, did you ever have a notion about being a judge?
When I got out of law school and came to practice law, I really thought that was a great idea. Mm-hmm. But I lost a good deal of interest doing that when I got interested in politics, went to the legislature, and went on from there to other things.
During three terms in the Texas House, Sanders worked on the Texas Mental Health Code and legislation that created the Trinity River Authority. He went on to serve as Dallas County campaign manager for the Kennedy-Johnson ticket. And in 1961, he became U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Texas under Kennedy, where Sanders had his first brush with the issue most associated with him, school desegregation.
Attorney General Bobby Kennedy decided he wanted to make an attempt in the South to do some desegregation. So he asked U.S. attorneys to go to see individual school districts to see if they would do a grade a year desegregation. And that was as far as things could go prior to the Civil Rights Act of 1964.
But it was 1970 before things would go further in Dallas. Sam Tasby sued the school district because his children had to attend black schools farther from their neighborhood than white schools. Jimmy Carter appointed Sanders to the federal bench in 1979, and the Dallas case was still unresolved by the time it was assigned to him in 1981. The major issue at the time was busing. Sanders ended much of it by 1986.
And the reason I did was because in running all the statistics, it showed that, and for instance, in South Dallas, a lot of the African-American children in South Dallas were being bused up into Northeast Dallas, and they were going to school with African-American children up there. Well, there was no point in doing that. And the same thing was going on over in Oak Cliff, over into Northwest Dallas.
Sanders oversaw creation of local learning centers, bond initiatives, and new magnet schools. But he was not satisfied that remnants of past discrimination had been eliminated until 2003, 33 years after the Tasby suit was filed. And by then, DISD was a mostly minority district.
Judge, is there a lesson to be learned from all of this?
The lesson to be learned, if we just started out and done it immediately, it would not have been nearly as painful or been nearly as costly, and would have been accepted, I think, by the public here. The Dallas public was more sophisticated than they were being given credit for. So the lesson I took from it was that the public was willing to go along as they had, as long as they understood why necessary.
You are probably best remembered for the Tasby case.
Yeah.
Do you think that was your finest hour?
Well, as to what one's finest hour is, I suppose others that make that judgment. I'd like to think that we did a good job on that case, the way it was approached and the way it was accepted.
Sam Baker filed that interview with Judge Barefoot Sanders a couple years ago before his death. Here to discuss the judge's ongoing legacy, we have two guests. SMU Professor of History Glenn Linden wrote a lot about Judge Sanders in his book Desegregating Schools in Dallas, Four Decades in the Federal Courts. Kurt Schwartz served as a clerk for Judge Sanders in 1990 and 1991. Today, he is a partner at Jackson Walker LLP. Kurt, Glenn, welcome to Think.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Glenn, it seems as if there's any single quality that made Barefoot Sanders the man to desegregate schools in Dallas, it was persistence.
Yes, I think so. I use the example of Job, the great Job of the New Testament, Old Testament, who never gave up, just never gave up. And I think he, in the 22 years that he had this case from 1981 to 2003, must have sometimes said he had boils too, like Joe did, and didn't know what to do. But I think he was the perfect person, because the other three judges had not worked very well. Atwell was the first one, who was a Southerner who was very much opposed to it, and he was overturned so many times he got tired and quit. And Davidson was the next one, and he was a little bit more friendly, but not much more. He got the stair-step plan, which is one grade per year, and finally by the middle of the 60s they thought they were finished. And then finally you got the third judge, who was able to, I think, in the 70s do a pretty decent job, but still couldn't get the answer done. And then in 1981, Barefoot drew the straw. I know a couple other judges too, and they didn't want the thing either. And I don't think he really wanted it, but he also decided he would do it. And boy, once he decides he's going to do something, he does it. And I think, as my friend over here, what we tell you, he's very, very persistent and stayed with it. It's amazing to me, going over the last 50 years of my book, essentially Sanders and anybody else that's happening along. So Mac Taylor earlier had been pretty important too, but I think he's persistent and consistent and very, very careful about what was going on. He did not take it for granted that those things would be done, and he was right. They weren't done most of the time. But gradually, we got some things done.
Kurt, you were clerking for him sort of right smack in the middle of the whole experience. How high on the radar screen was this for the people in his office?
Well, during the year I was there, it was of some importance. It was certainly active, but it wasn't as big a public issue as it had been in earlier years. There was a lot of oversight of the school district that was going on at the time, and it really was, during my time at the court, a matter of oversight and making sure things were working. And one of the things about Judge Sanders that is often lost in discussing his legacy is he's very much a pragmatist. He wanted not only to make the right, you know, moral or legal decision, but also make a decision that worked. He often said that, you know, I'm paid to make decisions, but they've got to work. And that's what we really focused on a lot during my year. Otherwise, during my year, what was most active was the case that involved the state schools for the mentally retarded, which really exploded at that time because there was a rape of a young woman who became pregnant, and she had the...
she was a student at the school.
Right. She was in her 20s, but she had the mental capacity of essentially an infant, was on lots of medications, and made the pregnancy very dangerous. And basically the state did not want to do much about it. The state essentially took the view that it wasn't their problem, but because of the judge's oversight of the state schools for the retarded, he made sure that it was their problem, that they did take care of her. And ultimately the rapist was found and convicted, and a perfectly healthy young baby was born.
What was he like as a boss?
I have often said that I have never had a more fun job or a better boss. He was a really marvelous human being to work with. He brought his clerks quite literally into his family. We were over at his house often. We had reunions every year, Christmas parties every year. But in the office, he was hardworking. He expected you to work very hard, and I've honestly never seen a more relentless or hardworking judge in my life, or lawyer in my life. He was in the office early every day. I'd say he'd get there around by 7 o'clock in the morning. He never left before 6:30. During my time there, he never took a vacation. And in fact, I know he went years at a time without taking a vacation. He worked every Saturday, and often on Sundays after church he'd come in. He was a very, very rigorous guy.
So did he expect that of all of you as well?
It was hard. it was hard to work for him and not follow his example. But he made it fun. I mean, the job was to try to get the right decisions done and to try to answer some very difficult questions correctly. And to try to do it expeditiously, because he really did believe that, justice delayed is justice denied. And I know it sounds trite, but he believed very strongly in that. And so he worked very, very hard. But it was always a pleasure. He brown bagged his lunch every day and ate with his clerks. So we got to sit around the kitchen table and listen to stories about life in Washington and the LBJ administration.
And example. He eat his food too, I imagine. Huh?
Oh yeah, well he's legendary for his dietary habits. His major food groups were Fritos and barbecue and and jalapeno peppers.
And he lived to a ripe old age.
Yes, indeed he did. Indeed he did.
We are talking this afternoon about the legacy of Judge Barefoot Sanders, who, of course, died at his home on Sunday. Glenn Linden is SMU professor of history and the author of Desegregating Schools in Dallas, Four Decades in the Federal Courts. Kurt Schwartz is a partner today at Jackson Walker LLP, but he clerked for Judge Sanders in 1990 and 1991. We will return to our conversation in just a moment. If you have memories of Judge Sanders or have a question, we would invite you to call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send an email to think@ker.org. We also have those other important web addresses and phone numbers, and Jeff Whittington, senior producer of the show, is here now to give you those.
Thanks, Chris. It's 1-800-456-5372 or, of course, online at kera.org. If you listen to the station as much as we do, someone could probably poke you and you could say the phone number right now because it has been almost a week since we launched the drive. However, we are almost halfway. And we know that once we reach the halfway point, $250,000 raised during this membership campaign, things will accelerate. They always do because no matter how often we say it, that the drive ends when we reach the goal, there are many of you who like to wait. So we're trying to hurry up and get halfway so that we can get your involvement at 1-800-456-KERA.
Lots of folks to thank. Thanks to Daniel Kelly in Fort Worth, Catherine and James in Dallas, Kathy and Jack in Dallas. Perhaps you're on the line right now. Mary Thomas in Carrollton, Gabriel Ryan in Palestine, Patrick Rogers in Dallas. All of them have made the commitment. I'm always proud when people call during Think because I think it's a vote for this show in particular. But you're supporting, in fact, the whole station. So if this somehow is not your favorite program on KERA, the money still goes into the same fund and pays for all the great programs that you love.
Yeah, just the national programs from NPR, PRI, American Public Media, the bill for those shows, like Morning Edition, The Diane Rehm Show, Prairie Home Companion, Marketplace, Fresh Air, all things considered, that bill is about $1 million a year. So your contribution of $120, $240 directly offsets the costs associated with not just paying, just to pay for the programs. We still have to keep the lights on. We still have to run the transmitter, fix all the equipment. We have to have employees. We have to be able to bring people into the studio to interview them for shows like Think. So it all adds up. Every expense that any business has, it's the same here at KERA. And when you give a contribution, it goes into that pot that makes up over half of the revenue necessary to run this operation. So please consider supporting it today at 1-800-456-5372.
You know, it's funny, Jeff, that part of our jobs here, we're associated with raising money on the air, and it's sort of a public function of what we do. But there's not a single person in this building that I think puts money ahead of anything else. Everybody loves to do their jobs, which relate to the content that we bring you all the time. We're always happy to get beyond fundraising so that we can get right back full-time to serving you with the great coverage that you expect. We can do that all the faster when you call 1-800-456-5372 or go to kera.org. You might want a thank you gift, which is perfectly acceptable to us. You might want to go see Sweet Honey in the Rock.
Yeah, for a $90 contribution on a credit or debit card, you can get two tickets to see Sweet Honey in the Rock, and they are performing at the Majestic Theater on Friday, October 3rd. Maybe we can get that on one sheet.
We have these little prompts so that we don't have to memorize.
I'm just going to say it on the air. It'd be great, Scott, to get that on one sheet of paper. Scott Murray's our pledge producer.
A very hardworking pledge
producer. Yeah, he's doing a great job.
He does literally every job this time of year.
Friday, October 3rd, 7:30 p.m., a $90 contribution on a credit card. You can get two tickets to see Sweet Honey in the Rock at the Majestic Theater. Call now, 1-800-456-5372, or join online at kera.org. Please do your part.
Yeah, if we've mentioned a book today, for example, earlier we had Pat Choate's book, Dangerous Business, or any book that has been offered during Think, those are probably still available. So ask the volunteer when you get online. You can also check those out on the website, kera.org. The number, once again, is 1-800-456-5372. How about just making a call of $10 or $20 a month? The call only takes you 5 seconds.
Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, offering flexible part-time graduate study. You can follow your passion at SMU and learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking this hour about the legacy of Judge Harold Barefoot Sanders, who died earlier this week. Kurt Schwartz is here. He is a partner now with Jackson Walker, but he clerked for Judge Sanders in 1990 and 91. Glenn Linden is SMU professor of history and the author of a book called Desegregating Schools in Dallas, Four Decades in the Federal Courts. If you want to join our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372, and that's where we find Marty in Dallas. Hello, Marty.
Hello.
Hi. Go ahead,
please. I have a memory of Sanders that I'd like to pass along. I heard this from my cousin, who's an attorney. And evidently one of the cases that ended up in Judge Barefoot Sanders' court was the Hunt case, the silver market cornering.
Ooh, the two brothers.
Well, my cousin was representing, we shall not name it, but he was representing a major creditor, and he was one of about five attorneys. So my cousin said here was a courtroom filled with some of the highest, the most talented high attorneys in a very complex case. And he told me, he said, Judge Sanders kept ahead of all of them. He never forgot a fact. He knew exactly what the arguments were. He said it was amazing. He's tried cases in front of a lot of judges, and he said Barefoot Sanders was one of the most amazing.
Marty, thank you so much for sharing that. I really appreciate
Certainly.
It. You guys are both nodding your heads. It sounds like that goes absolutely along with his reputation.
Oh, indeed. And in fact, I have friends and colleagues who were involved in that litigation, and they would have said exactly what the caller just did.
Is it true he was big on field trips for himself, for the jury, that he would sort of go on site to investigate things?
It is true. It didn't happen as frequently as perhaps legend would have it. But in fact, he cared very deeply about learning the facts of a situation that was before him. So, for example, one of his first larger cases had to do with basically a disaster of the, I don't know what you call them. The trams out at Fair Park. One of them, a couple of them fell.
Right.
And
Fair Park, yeah.
He took the jury out there so they could see for themselves, you know, what the situation was. He had an environmental case where he tromped around a landfill for a day just to kind of get the lay of the land. He visited the state schools for the retarded and the state institutions for the mentally ill. He believed very, very strongly in understanding what the facts on the ground actually were and wouldn't simply accept what was written in some brief if he had the opportunity to go witness it himself.
Glenn, how did he keep tabs on what was going on with desegregation?
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, just by thinking. He had a monitor. It was Yvonne Yule for a time was on a school board, and also Sandra Malone. And so he kept pretty close touch, and they were quite concerned that his court orders were not being obeyed, and much of the time they were not being obeyed. It's difficult to get Dallas to desegregate. I mean, that's just a fact of life. For the most part, nobody wants to send a kid somewhere else. But in fact, the answer, and he was willing to minimize the busing in order and have better programs, but he had to have information. So first was Yvonne Yule, and finally she was removed because Linus Wright was not happy with her particularly, and there was a tremendous amount of frustration. He protected her, but he couldn't. At some point, he simply had to let her go. Now, Sandra Malone was another question. She kept track, and she would watch the reports. There are reports coming in all the time, and he reads the reports. He's not fooling around with it at all, and he would then say some things like one example was, DISD doesn't seem to want to do anything. They don't do anything voluntarily at all, and I don't know what it takes to do that. In which case, the chairman of the school board said, even a fool knows you can't force these people to bus, and even a judge isn't going to be a fool. But I think with his care for detail and his willingness to continue to work with various individuals himself. I didn't know him personally. I did talk to him a number of times, but don't have the kind of information Kurt has here. But But I do know that in what he did was thorough, and for 22 years he was doing it. I mean, we're talking about a long time, I think he had enough information. I think he's prepared to let it go a little earlier if the school board had done a better job.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak to Karen in Boston, Massachusetts. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I have a question for Kurt, and I would like to know, I understand that Kurt has been a longtime friend also of the judge, and I would like to know if he'd be willing to share a favorite memory.
Oh, there are a lot of wonderful memories. I mean, the way he brought his law clerks into his family was very touching and extremely special to all of us. He had over 50 law clerks, and yesterday at his memorial service, there were over 40 of us there, and they came as far away as Seattle and Brussels, Belgium, and so simply getting to know the other clerks was very special. But I could go on for a long time like this, but anyone who knew the judge knew that he was a big animal lover, and particularly a dog lover. And he had a dog named Fred that was, as all of his dogs were, you know, shelter rescue dogs. And Fred would freak out in the middle of a thunderstorm. And so it didn't matter if the judge was in the middle of a very important trial. If he got word from his longtime secretary, Phyllis Macon, that a storm was coming, he would shut down the trial and go home and give Fred his little doggy Valium so he could, you know, get through the storm.
So they could both relax at that
right.
point. Oh, that's great. Karen, do you have a favorite memory?
I guess we lost her.
Hello, sorry.
Hi. Yeah, do you have a favorite memory, Karen?
I don't, but I know Kurt has been very close with the judge, not only clerking for him, but as a friend, a dear friend. And I appreciate him sharing those wonderful thoughts.
Well, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you.
And I appreciate having my sister call in.
The family's in on it now. Okay.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. I had to look twice because his daughter is also a judge in Massachusetts.
His daughter, Janet is a judge in the Superior Court of Massachusetts. And he certainly didn't push any of his kids to go into law. In fact, his other children didn't. But she's a very good judge, and it's been a pleasure knowing her. I met her again when I was clerking for the judge, and I've seen her many, many times since.
The judge was too good an example, so his kids followed him. You try to make them do something, they won't do it. But if you do it by example, then they'll follow you.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Ed in Weatherford. Hello, Ed.
Hi.
Hi.
I was just wondering if the guests would want to share any information about the suit with the Texas Department of Mental Health and Mental Retardation and how the judge and the court looked on that and handled it. And of note, it's interesting that the monitor in that case just recently died also.
Actually, the monitor in the case, the monitor who just died recently was named David Ferris, and he was the monitor for the state institutions for the mentally ill. The monitor for the case that involved the state schools for the mentally retarded is Linda O'Neill, or wasn't Linda O'Neill. What the judge really pushed for in both those cases was for the parties to settle. And that really meant getting the right people in the right positions to make the right decisions in order to improve those institutions. He really believed that all citizens in this country should be treated with dignity and respect. And at the time he took over those cases involving those state institutions, they were essentially warehouses for people who the rest of society essentially discarded, and they were just stored in these institutions. And the judge ultimately improve them tremendously. I would not say that there aren't still problems, but if you were to compare before and after, you'd see tremendous improvements. And one of the main reasons for that was the fact that he pushed the state to get good lawyers involved and to get them really in, you know, in kind of on the ground, not just coming into court and making arguments, but really dealing with the day-to-day practical issues that were that needed to be addressed in order to improve those situations. And in both cases, he did.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Up next is Tim in Dallas. Hello, Tim.
Yes, this is Tim Timmons. When Barefoot was appointed U.S. Attorney for the 100-county Northern District of Texas, he hired me as an assistant U.S. attorney, I recall vividly that on days when I was not in trial, I would sometimes get to the office around 9 o'clock, and he would be standing at the counter going through the morning mail and would gently jibe me with a good afternoon, Tim. I had occasion on a daily basis to observe his vigorous and his steely determination coupled with his very fine sense of fairness in representing the government in both the district courts and the circuit courts. But I particularly recall that during those dark, dark days after the assassination of President Kennedy, Barefoot and I worked very closely together, and I saw at close range his calm and deliberate demeanor as well as his inquisitive mind. All during those stressful times, and he even during those sad days, he remained calm and thoughtful and deliberate, and he of course later did an oral history, as did I, at the Sixth Floor Museum about those times. But over the years, I always saw I should add that when he was President Johnson's legislative assistant, when LBJ signed the Safe Streets Act, Barefoot very thoughtfully sent me a copy of one of the signing pens that President Johnson had used in signing that very important criminal Safe Streets Act. But I always saw his, over the years, in every instance, his integrity and his compassion and his real greatness. It was just as apparent as a lantern light at midnight. And the likes of Barefoot Sanders will not be seen again, we will miss him very greatly.
Tim, so kind of you to call. Thank you so much.
The caller actually raised an interesting point. If I could butt in here,
sure,
for a second. In his tenure as United States Attorney for the Northern District of Texas, Barefoot Sanders hired the first female assistant U.S. attorneys that had ever been hired in this district. And, back then, there weren't that many women in law, but it was almost unheard of to have a federal prosecutor be a woman, and he hired the first ones. And it's not, I don't think, a complete coincidence that some of his female law clerks went on to become assistant U.S. attorneys themselves.
And we can tell the story after we come back from this break, but he also saw to it that the first woman ever to swear in a president of the United States was in the place. Sarah Hughes. We'll tell that story in just a minute. Yeah. We're talking with Glenn Linden and Kurt Schwartz about the legacy of Judge Barefoot Sanders, who died this week. We will return to this discussion in a very short time, but right now we need to pause for just a minute to do some fundraising. Please give us a call at 1-800-456-5372 or send email to go to KERA.org and click on the support page and send email at the same time.
Your producer came in. This is Jeff.
Hello, Jeff.
And started laughing because
which happens on a regular basis.
No, I usually keep it to myself, but it is membership week here at the station, and you know what it's all about. It's all about you. It's about your public radio resource. It's about your show that you call into every day. Think it's about your participation. And it's about raising $500,000, honestly, of which we've raised, we're getting closer and closer to $240,000, which is really great. But we still are waiting. We are still waiting to hear from you. Actually, there's some of you that we'll always wait to hear from, because I've got this new theory that you are either, you're one of two kinds of public radio person. You're either never going to join or you're eventually going to join. You may have already joined, so you're that kind of person. Or there's some day that you are finally going to get involved at 1-800-456-5372 or online at kera.org. And it's about converting today to that day. For me, that's my strategy. here at the microphone at
well,
this
you know,
moment.
The world only improves and gets better when we decide to do something about the things that matter to us. And I really think the existence of public radio and the ability to get substantive conversations that last a while and go into different topics that don't necessarily all cleave to the same line of thinking, I think that's critical in our society. And we always say now more than ever, but it does feel like right now these are difficult times. And it's great to be able to have a source of good information and discussion. So give us a call and support that at 1-800-456-5372 or go to KERA.org. You can join with a credit card. You can set up a sustaining membership, which is basically like an automatic deduction from your checking account every month. Either way, it's easy and it can be as affordable as you want it to be.
1-800-456-5372. Online at KERA.org. And while you're online at KERA.org, you can go to KERA.org/, after you've made your contribution, of course, go to KERA.org/news-2008-Sanders. And there is a page with stories, with audio, and I think there are even going to be some video segments put up on that page sometime today. So it's yet another place that you can go. It's yet another opportunity that KERA is giving you to go a little bit further into and behind the story, a huge story here in North Texas, a huge, larger-than-life figure, and we're thrilled to bring you that as well.
You know, I was excited to hear, we're sitting here with Kurt and Glenn talking about Judge Sanders, and Kurt tells me that he was a listener to the station, which is nice.
Really?
To know. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
1-800-456-5372, online at KERA.org. It is a one big community, and when you join the station, you become a little bit more tightly knitted within that community. You have a little bit more of a stake in the community of people who use and listen to KERA. You've already chosen, as I've said, you've already chosen to listen to the station. You've already chosen to spend your time with the station. Why not spend a little bit of money, $5 a month, $10 a month, to make sure that it is here for yourself and for your community.
The great thing about working here is we get to meet all kinds of people who are members of the station. Very often, if they find out what we do for a living, they'll introduce themselves and say, "Oh, I'm a member." And I have to say, it's really exciting to me that you can't tell them by the way they dress. You can't tell them by the way they look. There's people with three-piece suits on every day and people with tattoos and nose rings and everything in between. It really is just a community of people united by their desire to know about their world and to really explore it and to think about it.
1-800-456-5372, online at KERA.org. And further proving my theory, there are also people that we meet out in the world that say, you know, I listen all the time, but I'm not going to be a member. So I think that it's just about making today your day. Today is the day that if you're ever going to pledge, why not pledge today at 1-800-456-5372. And if you're not, you know, I don't know what we can say.
What's $50? What's $100? You know, it's easy to do.
It's just money.
Anyway. For some of you out there, what's $5,000? 1-800-456-5372. Thanks.
Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, offering flexible part-time graduate study. You can follow your passion at SMU and learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking this hour about the legacy of Judge Harold Barefoot Sanders, who died this week. If you've got a memory to share or a question to ask, please call us at 1-800-933-5372. My guests this hour are Glenn Linden. He's a professor of history at SMU. He wrote a book called Desegregating Schools in Dallas, 4 decades in the federal courts. Kurt Schwartz is with us as well. He's a partner at Jackson Walker and was a clerk for Judge Sanders in the early 90s. Again, you can join us at 1-800-933-5372. So we sort of teased you with this information, but Judge Sanders had a lot to do with the fact that it was Sarah T. Hughes who swore President Johnson into office.
Actually, he was involved in it,
yeah.
And he and his old friend, the late Irvin Goldberg, who was just a giant of a judge, just a magnificent judge who had served on the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, had competing stories about what happened that day. I think what they did agree on was that Judge Goldberg suggested that Sarah Hughes be the Judge Goldberg wasn't on the bench yet, but Irvin Goldberg suggested that Sarah Hughes, who was a federal judge, be the judge who swore in President Johnson to the presidency. Where they diverged in their accounts of the day was no one knew where the oath of office was. And apparently Sarah Hughes says, it doesn't matter, I'll just make something up. Other folks decided that it would be good to get the official oath. Now, Judge Goldberg always claimed that he knew right away that it was in the Constitution. Judge Sanders differed with him and suggested that that it was someone from the Justice Department in Washington who finally figured that out. But they did find the oath, and Judge Hughes did administer it properly.
Well, we haven't talked too much about the other impact impacts on the school district that Judge Sanders had. But, Glenn, one of the things that he did that I think a lot of people are really excited about now is put into place the system we have of magnet schools.
Yes, what he decided to do, and I'm sure Kirk can help with that too, but he took over in 1981, and he decided after a while he didn't really want to do the more busing. Tremendous pressure on him to do busing. But he had to have something in place of that, because if you don't bus him, then what are you going to do? So the magnets were strengthened, and that magnets are one of the I think for a legacy from Sanders, magnets are at the height of it, I think. But also he did a South and West Dallas educational centers. And that's all one-race stuff. Well, one-race, it was not easy to get the Supreme Court and any of the courts to agree with that. But what he did was many of the parents didn't want to bus him anymore. But these are largely black parents. Back to Oak Cliff or back to South Dallas. And so what he did was they put up the money, they got the best teachers they could, and they began to put little places where they could really get a good education. The question is, how do you take minority students who are a ways back and move them forward? And what you do is get good teachers, and you put some extra money in there, and you begin to put it together. And what happened is, I think the very heart of the program is not the busing, which he opposed and eventually ended, and it becomes optional. But it's those centers which continue to work. And they did a really good job. And I have many teachers of mine, because I've done secondary work and with the kids too, and been impressed with the quality of his work. And he looked at that carefully. He started the South, yes, but he wasn't ready for the West yet. And they were trying to push him harder, and he wasn't going to be pushed too hard, because it had to be right. And he was never in a hurry to do things. You really didn't push him around very much.
No, one did not.
So you think we should have more? Well, more isn't always better unless you got teachers and you got the resources, which means you have the bond issues. Some of the criticism of Barefoot over the years have been he's always trying to get more money for the school board and all this stuff. Some say for other things, but frankly, there was never enough money for the schools in the system. And so he continually worked for that. But so I think if you look for a legacy, it will be the schools. The fact that the schools are better now by a long shot, because I came here in 68, been here 40 years now, and there's a real difference between the schools then and now. Now, it isn't to say that they're all better, but it is to say that they are reading and writing, operating at a higher level than they were. Now, obviously, everybody has to catch up. It's whites and African Americans and Hispanics. But in general, I think what he has done is to make it possible for them to be successful. And they would not otherwise have done that, because just busing him wasn't going to do it. And he could see that, and the NAACP and others were quite unhappy without more busing. So I think he went to programs. He went to things that would work, and where scores went up, and the results were very satisfactory.
Dallas schools today are certainly not segregated according to any legal definition, but it's 93% minority, about a little less than 7% white, which does not reflect the overall population of Dallas exactly. Was that something that bothered him?
Well, you're including the Hispanics with the blacks, and Hispanics have a different set of ideas. The Hispanic population, Mexican Americans,
they never were put into separate schools.
No,
certainly.
No, they weren't. Mm-hmm. They had separate things they wanted too. So a part of the problem was, what Mac Taylor did was to accept them as an ethnic group, and then when Barefoot went on, he had to continue working with them, and so they have a series of ways and measuring what's going on. But so I think I think we're probably, unless some great changes occur, we're going to continue to have that going on, and I don't know what the answer would be.
I don't know that it bothered him in the sense that it wasn't a legal issue that he could change. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, as I said earlier, he wanted to understand the facts on the ground and deal with them. And if those were the facts, that's what he was going to deal with.
That pragmatism again.
Right. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it particularly bothered him. A lot of people accused him of causing white flight to the suburbs, for example, and that had started decades before, and
100 years earlier.
Right. And he recognized that perhaps some people fled a desegregating school system, but that he did not perceive that as it's kind of part of his job. His job was to follow the Constitution and desegregate the schools as best as he could figure out how to do.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's speak next to Mary in Dallas. Hi, Mary.
Hi. In addition to all these memorable things about Barefoot and what an exceptional person he was, I just feel the need to talk for a moment about Jan Sanders, his wife, who was his greatest supporter, who was such an asset to Barefoot in those times that could be very stressful, and she played a very important role in seeing that those of you that served as his clerks were remembered and awarded for the job that you did so well.
I appreciate you mentioning Jan because she's a magnificent person, and it's not only the law clerk family, but everyone who at the courthouse knows and loves Jan. She's just a remarkable person, and she kept this huge extended family together, and we all love her.
Mary, thank you so much for your call. How do you both think that I'll start with you, Glenn. You can tell us how Dallas is different, and then maybe, Kurt, you'll talk about how you're different for having worked with Judge Sanders.
I think Dallas is different today. You're talking about educational process. It seems to me that there are continuing problems going on right now, so it's a little hard to talk about that. But having been working in the schools off and on for the last 40 years, I would say that there's more money going in. The teachers are better. And the scores are higher too. But the problem is you have a separation, yes, in a way that you shouldn't have. But blacks tend to be where they want to be, and whites another place. So, and you try to look for ways to bring them all together, and sometimes a football game will bring them together or something else doing it. But I think the real problem for it to be faced in the long run is how we can get to know each other separate from the race or the ethnicity. And that's a great challenge. Social studies teachers try to make that work, but whether it's dances or whether it's activities, but it's a very hard thing to do. So we're a lot better off than we were now. But the problem is you don't have any segregation, but we also don't have the integration. And how you get the integration, it's only going to be over time. And we are, our country is the greatest country in the world in terms of minorities. We're all minorities. We all came from some other place. But how do we bring it together? So I think the new leader, whoever it is, whether it's McCain or it's Obama, is going to have to be looking at that too, because we're looking at some fairly serious problems that won't be resolved without some plans of some sort.
On a personal note, Kirk?
Well, I could go on for a very long time about that. I mean, Aristotle observed that justice is a peculiar virtue because its possessor benefits his fellow members of society rather than himself. And that concept really expresses for me what Judge Sanders was all about. And so I would say that if I had to pick out one thing, in addition to the wonderful friends and our extended kind of Sanders family, the one thing I'd point out is the idea of public service. Judge Sanders was very proud of being a judge. He was very proud of the work he did in the Johnson White House, particularly in helping gain the passage of the Voting Rights Act. But he really believed that any sort of participation in trying to improve your community or your country not only helped the community or the country, but it made you a better and more enhanced and fulfilled person. And so I try to do pro bono work, and I'm involved in organizations that Judge Sanders cared about, such as Dallas CASA, which cares for abused kids. And I think everyone who knew him understood from his example that giving back to the community and participating in giving to public service was very, very important, not only for the rest of the community, but for yourself.
Kurt Schwartz, Glenn Linden, thanks so much, gentlemen, for being with us today.
Well, thank you for calling us.
Thank you very much.
Thanks to all of you who have called to participate in the show today and share your memories. And also thanks to those of you who are supporting the station financially today by calling 1-800-456-5372. We are able to bring you the kind of programming we do because we are not commercially supported, because we're able to make the kinds of choices that reflect who our main funders are, and that is you, the listener. 53% of our funding comes directly from individuals who listen to the station. Some of you have a lot of extra cash, some of you have just a little bit, but you make the commitment to spend money on something that you value, which is public radio. You can do that right now by calling 1-800-456-5372, or you can send email, or rather you can go to the website, KERA.org, click on that support button, and we'll try to make it as quick and easy as possible. Usually the phone call takes about a minute and a half.
1-800-456-5372 is the number. We've hit $238,000. Please call or go online right now. Help push us past the $240,000 mark. We would love to hear from you. We really would love to have your participation, mostly. We're thrilled that you listen. We're thrilled that more and more of you. We just got a recent ratings period book back from Arbitron, and even more of you are listening to KERA each week than in the past. And you know, when you go and talk to our VP of Radio and Program Director Jeff Ramirez, he goes, "Oh, it's, you know," but it really is. It's amazing how many people tune into KERA each week. It's also amazing how much it makes our dues at NPR go up from year to year. So we're asking you to offset that cost, especially if you've been listening for a long time, or even if you've just discovered KERA or just discovered public radio. This is how it works.
That's right. Come back on in. We're thrilled to have you, but be aware that the more people who listen, the more we pay. And so the truth is, you might think, well, the station's already out there. Someone else is paying for it. My existence as a listener doesn't make a difference one way or another. The truth is, it does. And that's why we ask you to make a contribution at 1-800-456-5372. The truth is, if everyone who listened joined us at, like, an incredibly low level, $5 a month, we might be able to have, I don't know, one drive a year, who knows. But it's only a fraction of people. I don't know what it takes to convince people that this is important, because you pay for a million other things in your life. You pay for sweaters and shoes and fast food meals and God knows what. Public radio is important.
Imagine that Chris's cute little kids have just rung your doorbell, and she's waiting in the idling car at the end of the sidewalk. You know,
so we'd be on the bikes.
Okay, very good, and you know, she's, you know, smiling and waving at you, and they're asking you to support their public radio station. I mean, if it comes to that, Chris, you know, that's what we'll have to do.
I could get the little one down here for pledge. She'd probably be very afraid.
maybe we should record some stuff with her. Okay, note to self. But. You know, imagine that's how this is working, because this is a resource that many, many people use. It is like, you know, in a sense, like the education system, although we're not a taxing authority. We don't have the right to send you a bill unless you ask us to send you a bill.
We're happy to do so.
we can't, you know, get the station CRV, you know, in your neighborhood driving around, because we don't necessarily know where all of you live. So imagine that we're doing it that way. Imagine that we have cute little kids in KERA t-shirts knocking at your door and asking you to please support KERA.
1-800-456-5372. You know what's really nice? And this is another way that, you know, it's a small thing, but that our membership department is really responding to something many of you have asked for. We're trying really hard to cut down on the amount of paper mail that we send out there. And so we have now this green membership. If you don't want to receive a lot of pieces of paper in the mail and reminders and things like that, you can ask for a green membership, and then we'll communicate with you almost exclusively via email. We'll send you our member rewards card, and that comes in an envelope and all that. But for the rest of the communications, we limit ourselves to email. I think it's great. It cuts down on the junk that ends up in your house, and it still allows you to participate fully. You get all the same information. It's a great deal.
1-800-456-5372. We're still working on the membership card that after 1 year bursts into flames in your wallet, so that, you know, to remind you that it's time to renew.
Or it biodegrades, like it's made of corn or something. And it's just
you can eat it if you get really hungry. Oh gosh! Can you tell I've been here? I've been here since
6 o'clock. What time did you get here this morning?
About 5:45. Yeah. But hey, that's—I mean, Sam Baker is probably still in the newsroom, you know, filing stories, getting work done. So I can't really complain.
We've got like a beer keg-sized coffee machine this week. we're working our way through. We're actually happy to be here. You know, we talk about not liking fundraising. The only reason we don't like it is because it takes us away from regular programming. But the truth is, it's a nice way to be able to interact with you, and so many of you make the job so pleasant by calling 1-800-456-5300. 372 is the number. Think about this. You listen to public radio. Maybe you're paying for your own membership. Maybe you want to increase your contribution a bit so that you can guarantee that public radio is out there for those who might be positively influenced by a media source that gives you all the information instead of just one side of the information. Consider that your membership also includes sort of a gift membership for other people who might come to a broader understanding of the world thanks to the programming.
Or perhaps people who are less fortunate than you, who you want them to be able to have access to this kind of information and entertaining news source. You know, when you join the station, you help make it available to everyone all over North Texas, regardless of income level or regardless of situation in life. This is a radio station that's there for everyone, and we want it to stay that way, and I know you do too. So call us, 1-800-456-5372.
Or go online to kera.org and click support. Thanks.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.